This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
All right, everyone, we have a boatload of guests. I don't know if you don't count as a guest, Yanni. So there's Yanni, and then three, Matt Moisen, who I've known for 20 years?
No. I think it's more than that.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more. 22 years.
Fitzgerald, Jamie Fitzgerald, who I've known for like, if I'd known Matt for 20, I had known you for 25.
Yep, early college.
Jimmy Dorn, I don't know really at all.
No, barely.
Three, makes a good pizza.
2 or 3 years.
What's the pizza with the hot red peppers on it?
I don't know, the pizza with the hot red peppers on it.
You guys don't have a name for that?
We have one called a Carol's, and that has pepperoni and hot peppers on it.
Yeah. Jimmy Dorn and I just brokered a boat deal.
Yeah.
Are you excited about our boat deal?
I'm pretty excited about it. I think the terms are completely reasonable.
I think we need to put some terms around it,
though. All right. Well, if you break it, you bought it.
Now, first thing I want to get into is, we have a guy, like, he's like the resident philosopher that never met him. A dude named Luke Ryan, who always writes in with vexing questions. I want to poll you guys on a question Luke Ryan had. Luke Ryan says, what one do I want to do first? Here's his first one. If you had to guess, imagine that you're standing on a patch of public ground. Okay. And you're looking at a deer who's also on public ground. But between you and the deer is private ground.
This happened to me on Saturday. Exactly.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I had this whole scenario go through my head. Because we're working a fence and we're looking at elk. And I'm like, they're on private. And then we realize, we're like, well, let's get a little closer and make sure. And then we realize, no, they're not on private. They're on public. But there's a corner, you know, like that was coming basically out between the two of us, and we had to go around that corner. But I kept thinking, well, what if we get close enough and all of a sudden I'm pinned, but I still haven't made it around the corner.
Bullet trespasses.
I'm going to have to shoot across. Yeah. So, but that didn't happen, but I had these exact thoughts.
Yeah. I don't understand. Who, I didn't even know. How did I all of a sudden like find out you got an elk without you having known you got an elk?
It's been a busy weekend.
So who are you out with?
My buddy Brady. And I had a cow tag that was good through the end of the year.
So you went out and shot a cow elk, didn't even like tell me about it.
Mm-mm. I figured I would today.
Well, I found out about it, but not in the way I normally like to find out about stuff. All right, so here you are. You're Giannis. Okay? Just look at Giannis. You're Giannis. And you're on public looking at a deer, elk, what have you, on public, but your bullet needs to cross private. Your bullet will have to trespass to get there. Is that legal or not legal, Matt?
It's perfectly legal. And here's why.
How do you know?
I don't.
Oh.
But I'm saying it in a declarative way because it sounds more convincing. No.
It did. I thought you somehow knew.
Yeah. Because you don't own airspace when you own the land. And that is what your bullet is traveling through. No boot print to be found on that land.
Well, let me address that.
Okay.
Why is it illegal to corner hop?
Because you have to theoretically place a foot on the
corner hopping.
I know what you're talking about.
I want the listeners to understand corner hopping. This is another landscape or land issue, ownership issue. Imagine you got two squares. Okay, you got two squares, and the corners butt up, so the corners are touching. Now imagine that those two squares where the corners are touching are public property. And then the other two squares that would make up the big square. Am I saying this right?
Yeah. Keep going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're painting a good
checkerboard
picture.
Situation.
Yeah,
literally imagine a checkerboard, and you're only allowed to walk on the black spots. The white spots are private. The black spots on the checkerboard are public. You would think that you would be able to walk up to the very tippy corner of a black piece, reach your foot out and over, and land your foot on the corner of the next black piece and step over to it and have not trespassed. If you're going by what Matt Moisen is telling you.
And that's illegal? That kind of corner hopping?
Corner hopping is illegal.
It's illegal. It's illegal.
Because you're passing through, I don't know how, you're passing, right? Your body is passing through. So I don't know that the answer is an airspace issue.
Oh, God.
If you were hunting, but it probably helps. Because let's say you were hunting deer with a bowling ball. You could see a guy saying, hey, man, you just rolled your ball across my property. Uh-huh. You can't do that.
And what's interesting, too, is if you flew an airplane
up high.
Altitude does it become private?
Yeah. I don't know. I can't go hover a drone 18 inches off your picnic table while you're eating dinner.
Are you sure?
No. But
yeah, I'm not sure.
All right. So, Fitz, what do you
think? We need to get FAA in on this.
Well,
because
I know. I haven't called that FAA, but I do have some insight.
It seems to me that those boundaries go up, right? This is a poor analogy probably, but I'm going to use it. In the NFL, in order to determine a touchdown, the football has to break the plane, and that plane goes up. That's how they use to demarcate an end zone for football.
Got you.
So to me, it seems similar.
And you're a sports fan.
I am a sports fan.
Are you a Seahawks fan?
No.
Jimmy Doran is. Holy shit, is that guy a Seahawks fan?
Oh my God, I love the Seahawks.
I got no problem with the Seahawks.
I can't even begin to understand it. But anyways, sports fan.
So So I think that boundary goes
Arm can just pass over the end zone when your body never touches the end zone and you win, or you get the point.
All you got to do is have that ball over that plane, which goes up to, you know, the heavens.
What if it just passes through and passes back out of it?
Doesn't matter. You cross that plane. That's a term. They cross the plane.
Imagine your checkerboard is in 3D. So yeah. It's like all those.
I didn't know that football counted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're saying, I get what you're saying, but what about the bullet?
Yeah. I think if that bullet passes the plane, using that same analogy, then that bullet is on private land for however long it takes to travel across.
But do private laws apply to bullets?
I would think so, because the bullet came from an operator, right? From somebody making the decision to shoot across that private land.
Jimmy Dorn?
Well, depends. Like everything else in life. I don't know. I suppose looking at it from both sides of the question. If I'm the private landowner, am I going to want somebody throwing an .06 round across my property? Probably not.
Yeah, but we're not asking you what you want. We're asking you, is it?
Well, I kind of try to quiz test. Answer it, though. If I was the guy and I was in that situation, I would put myself in the other guy's shoes and go, that might piss me off. Or, how big is it? What's the ramifications of my decision making? I don't know. I would say it's probably not kosher, and I'd try to figure out a way to just get around the private. Is that the answer?
Not really.
Jimmy's answer is predicated on how big the elk is on the side.
Whether you ask for permission or forgiveness.
That's right. It's a lot easier to ask for permission in my experience.
Speaking of that, real quick, can you talk about the guy you harvest wheat for and what happened with that buck on his property?
It was a buddy of mine. It was not the guys that I work with.
Oh, I've been telling that story all wrong.
That's great. Yeah, he caught somebody. Sure, we can tell a story. I won't name names.
So it wasn't the guy you assist with his agricultural operations?
No, just another guy that lives in town. And there was a few deer on his place that he had seen. And then, lo and behold, there was a pickup truck that didn't belong there, which is how anybody thinks you can get away with anything past a farmer in their area. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
And
you mean the fact that someone would think that he would
not go unnoticed? Yeah, it would go unnoticed. And then, they had seen this buck, and it was an absolute monster of a deer. I'll show you a photo in a bit. And, all of a sudden, he hears bang, and he's like, wait a minute. And he's like, oh, because he thought possibly they were going to be hunting coyotes.
Blouch.
Blouch. And he thought, and then where he heard it coming from, he's like, nope, I'm going to run over there and see if they just shot that deer that I was saving, because he was actually saving it for his kid. And, of course, he went over there, and they were down the bottom of the coulee, quickly field dressing it. And he went down and, you know, read them the riot act. And, you know, then they threw themselves on the sword. And he's like, oh, I didn't, you know, he started the story with he didn't think he was trespassing. But, you know, he knew full well he was trespassing. And then it devolved into the, oh, that's the biggest deer I ever saw in my life. I also hate telling stories like this, too, because, you know, it's like that told three stories down the line how all the facts kind of change. But anyways.
So he tried out the idea that
he wasn't trespassing. And but he had to jump a fence, so it's kind of hard to say I didn't know that that fence wasn't there for a reason.
So then it became, it was just so big.
He's like, it, and then it devolved, yeah. And then, yeah, and the deer was so big, I don't know what happened, you know, and he's like, all right, we'll get the heck out of here. But then he called the sheriff and Fish and Game, and they came and they took everything and wrote him a bunch of tickets. And Fish and Game ended up with a big, really big deer. Biggest one I've seen in the area in a while.
Yeah, it was big. I don't want to tell too many details of this because I don't.
It's best not.
No, no, not your thing. A whole different story.
Oh, okay.
My brother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he knows of him or knows him or knows of him. Mm-hmm. But there's a feller who poached a buck.
Okay.
And the buck got confiscated by the state fish and game agency. And the state fish and game agency, as they often do, have it mounted. And they hang it in a game office, right? And you like a lot of times you go into game offices that, I've seen all over the place, and they'll have all these animals up, like exemplary specimens, and with them is like the story of how they were confiscated or whatever, hit by a car, mm-hmm. you know, poachers they caught. And this buck carries the name of the that tells the story of the poaching case.
Mm-hmm.
My brother says that this guy is still so proud of that buck that he takes friends down to Fish and Game, takes friends down to Fish and Game to show them the buck.
He was okay with the fine. That's great.
Wow.
He's like, matter of fact, I got a nice buck. If you'd like to take a ride down to the Fish and Game
agency, not in my shop,
I can show it to you.
Can't touch it.
Yeah, they confiscated it, confiscated everything, and then wrote him a whole bunch of tickets. And then one of the fellas that was involved wasn't supposed to be accessing firearms, and apparently he got in a bunch of trouble. So
I love that. That reminds me of another great story. Yanni, were you there? Did you meet this guy? You don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, then you tell me if you met him. I was talking to a warden who was watching one of those phony Alaska shows. Alaska hunting shows, and he's watching an episode, and there's a scene in there where they're going to go out and shoot some caribou, and the dad is making a big deal about how he's going to let his daughter do the shooting. And it just, the warden watching it just didn't like the, he just didn't strike me like the kind of guy who in this moment of cameras rolling and everything is not going to just want the glory. And it seems strange to him. He said, I'm sitting there watching and I'm thinking, that guy's got to be a felon and can't be on camera with that damn gun.
Oh.
And goes and turns it up and exactly right.
Is that right?
Yeah. So how'd you vote? No, or you don't know, or depends or something like that? Shooting bullets across private property?
I say negative. No, I wouldn't do it.
You're not answering the question, though.
The question is what exactly? Do I think it's illegal?
Is it not legal? Or, yeah.
I'm going to say that it's illegal.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough.
Yanni?
I already know the answer, so I can't vote. Because I was on the email chain, too.
Legal.
It's legal.
Legal.
No kidding.
Really?
Yeah, but don't get excited, man. It's legal, but I don't know. I don't think it's your airspace thing.
Oh, okay. What is it?
It just says it's not illegal. It's not unlawful. Now, I put this to an investigator in Idaho. Every state's different. So he says, I can only speak to here. He says it's not unlawful. to shoot from public to public over private. Really? Now, here's a doozy. Same fellow, the resident philosopher Luke Ryan, writes in to say this. You're in a state where you're not allowed to bait deer or put out mineral attractants. What's wrong, Fitz?
I think I know where you're going with this, but...
Oh, please.
No, I shooting across state line where you can do that?
No, 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 no. No, okay. We're done with shooting.
Oh, no shooting. Okay.
We're on baiting now, Fitz.
So, yeah, this is...
That's a good one, though. I like that.
Yeah.
So, you're in a state where it is unlawful to bait or use any kind of mineral attractant to hunt big game. But, as anyone who's wandered around out in the woods knows, ranchers who are running cattle have to put out supplements for livestock. So here you have where a rancher has out a salt lick or a supplement lick for his cattle, but it's illegal to put it out for critters. And you realize that elk are in fact using this legally placed supplement. Are you allowed to shoot deer out? Doesn't matter. Are you allowed to hunt over that legally placed supplement, which was not intended as an attractant? To add a little flavor to this, I'll point this out. In states where you're not allowed to bait for bears, there's often a lot of questions around, what if I shoot an elk and I gut the elk? Or keep talking about elk. Let's say I shoot a deer and gut the deer. And then the next day I wake up and there's a bear eating the deer. And I shoot it. Have I baited bears? Or not? We can get to that. But that's his color to this broader thing. The mineral lick thing. Matt?
No, oh, me first.
It's like a game show.
Oh, man.
Sitting third base at the
black deck table. If you feel like you're being unfairly picked on.
No, it's a challenge. I don't know. So, I'm not sure actually the answer, but I would say that is illegal. And I would say I feel like when I've read regulations that talk about the legality of using bait, using an attractant, they talk about having it be illegal to hunt over bait. Like, I don't think they talk about placing the attractant. I think they talk about it in terms of it being illegal to hunt over a placed bait or mineral attractant, whatever.
Well, okay.
But I don't know. I don't know.
That's great. But I want to add this.
Okay.
Color onto the color.
Okay.
And the bear thing. If you're in a non-bait state, but there's a dead animal laying there, you could shoot the bear. Now, if you shot a deer and dragged that gut pile 10 feet over to get it out in the little opening where you could spy on it from afar, that's baiting.
So do you think as long as you don't touch that mineral lick, as long as you did not manipulate it in any way.
I know the answer.
Ah, okay.
I know the answer for the person I put it to in Idaho.
Okay. I would
bear in mind the stuff we're talking about like that you, that you shot a deer and the next day you come by, there's a bear eating the deer. You didn't do anything to manipulate. Like, you shot the deer legally, gutted the deer, left the guts where they were. A bear happens to turn up on it, right?
I'm real hesitant about this one. I would be inclined to say that's probably not legal. It's an artificial attractant. Doesn't matter who put it there.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I think I'd guess the same. I don't know. But it seems that if there's going to be enforceable regulations, then and agencies are not going to want to get into the matter of intention.
Yeah.
So I think that they would try to make it as cut and dry as possible. And if... Plus, I think they would probably be relying on hunters, understanding that salt lick that was there for cattle is going to attract game. So it's the hunter's responsibility to, you know, resist that urge. But again, just a guess.
You know what happened to me one time?
I do.
Well, different time.
Not that time.
You know what happened to me one time that you don't know what happened?
I don't.
I know you don't. I was, I was in Idaho. And I was hunting with two other guys. And I didn't have a tag, but they did. And one day, it was raining real bad. And they didn't want to go out in the rain. So I went out on a little walkabout to see what I could see. And I get about 2 miles from our camp. And lo and behold, I'm coming down this trail, like a seldom used trail. But I look and standing in a place that I was just not expecting to see it, where it felt extremely out of place, is just a bull standing there looking at me. And like the first thing that struck my mind is like, you in your head, like how something's going to happen. I just didn't like, it's just as rare to be walking down a trail and all of a sudden there's a bull just like watching you, right? In a very like heavily hunted area. So I hauled ass back, got one of the guys, inspired him to, then we go back and it's gone. But then I started thinking so much about what was that thing doing there? And I walked over and it was a lick.
Salt lick.
It was a salt lick.
For livestock?
Yeah. Well, I actually had it in my head. It was like I said, not a heavily used trail. I kind of had it in my head that it might have been placed. Mm. Possibly. It wasn't like kind of like where usually you're going to put salt licks for animals kind of like in an area where livestock's actually going to hang around. Mm-hmm. You know, shade trees out in like grazing areas. Right. Just makes some sense. Just was not like a.
And I think they usually place too in places where they're trying to congregate the animals, like by a gate. You'll put a block so that, you know, when you come around a week later, you can then push the cattle through the gate.
By a gate or by water or something.
This just didn't look like, if I was ranching cattle, which I don't do, but if I was and I was like, I'm going to go, help the herd out with a lick. It's just, I wouldn't go like dump it where this thing was dumped.
Could have been a bad rancher.
Yeah. He could have been not good at running cattle. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I could have very easily, had I been holding the tag, I would have shot the bull. Mm-hmm. And I would have walked over, and he'd have been laying on salt, dead on a salt lick.
You didn't see this. You couldn't see it when you first encountered the bull.
No, I didn't see it until I walked. It was burning at me so much. Just something was so unusual about his position.
Right.
That I went over there, and sure enough, that's what was going on. So I could have, like, I would have, who knows? We haven't got to the end yet, so we don't know if I would have been an accidental poacher or not. Jimmy Dorn?
I'm going to go with what Fitz said, too. I'd say it's hunter's responsibility to know, and yeah, no. No bueno.
Yes. In Idaho, it says. And Yanni, you already know because you read the email.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Eric Crawford says, as for the salt baiting question, our rule states the following. This is in Idaho. No person shall take big game animals as outlined in this section with any bait, including grain, salt in any form, liquid or solid, or any other substance, not to include liquid scent, to constitute an attraction or enticement. He says in Idaho, it would be illegal, never mind that it is probably an ethical fair chase issue as well. So there you go, Luke Ryan.
They would have to prove the intent, though, right, like you were saying, because if you've never been to an area,
right,
and you pop up there at first light, and there's a herd, and you knock one down, and then you walk over there into the meadow, and you realize that there's 5 salt licks.
Yeah. How could it really be your fault?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking that one to court if I get a ticket.
Yeah, and they'll call me for a witness now. I'll be like, oh, Jimmy Dorn was talking all about this salt lick.
All right, boat privileges have been there.
How he was going to act like he didn't know it was there. Yeah.
He had someone else order the mineral rock for him.
Mm-hmm. Giannis, to get back real quick, can you finish talking about, so you went out and got this?
Got a cow.
You guys are hunting on public property, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge spot, but I found the spot because I was deer hunting there a couple years ago across the drainage.
And, oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And one like morning, the, like across the drainage, it just sounds like a war zone. You know, I'm like, oh my God, I glass over there and there's orange everywhere and elk flopping everywhere. And I'm like, man, should have been there, I guess, this morning, you know. And all day long from where I'm sitting, I can hear them and I can see dudes with sleds and horses and in and out and working this trail. It's probably only like a mile and a half, you know, from the truck. And by like midday, they all leave. They got their elk out and I continue to glass for deer. And like at 3 p.m., I glass back down to that meadow and there's cow elk filtering back out of the meadow. I'm like, well, I don't know what's going on down there, but I'm going to go get mine.
Sounds like a salt lake. Sounds like a salt lake down in there.
And so I came back the next weekend and they were right in there, killed a cow. And so yeah, a buddy of mine hiked in Saturday morning and perfect morning, man. Like just started snowing the night before and we've had zero snow in Montana and anything that we had is melted. So we had probably 2 or 3 inches of fresh and we get up to where we should be able to see the elk and don't see him for about 10 or 15 minutes. Just long enough where I'm like, yeah, what's plan B going to be? Like, do we just go for the big power loop or are we going to turn around and go home? And right then and there, we're just kind of being dumb hunters. We're out on a pretty exposed ridge at this point and, you know, hands up our butts and or fingers up
really?
Our butts. And
you and what's his name?
That's an expression.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For not paying attention. And I glass over kind of just out of my periphery where I really wasn't expecting them to be, just kind of into the trees a little bit. And there's a cow and a bull, which was the oddest thing, right? Because it's middle of December and you're expecting to see like a minimum of a dozen cows together, right? And if you see maybe just an animal or two, it'd be like two bulls. But to just see a cow and a bull together struck us as odd. But
they're actually in love. Like it's not just like for most elk it's just sex, right,
just September
sex. No, that's a life partner issue there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well I didn't help that out.
He's a widow. So he's back on the market. Yeah, put him back on the market.
But yeah, we just snuck right in there. And even I think season's been closed for 3 weeks now in Montana. And so I was expecting to have some chill elk and, you know, they'd be out feeding late, snowy morning. And man, this cow was definitely like moving towards the timber, moving towards the timber. And we had to hustle a little bit to get within rifle range before she got back onto private. So
now, what was the dude you were hunting with doing?
Just came along to hunt.
To help you out?
Yeah.
Oh, he was hunting too?
No. Sorry, just not hunting, not shooting. Just hunting.
We're good.
Enjoying the hunt. Yeah, it was perfect, man. We got her out in 2 trips. I don't know what else to say about it. It was, you know, easy.
No, it's
almost
just like,
too easy.
It's just, I've just had my feelings hurt that I had to find out about it by reading a text chain between you and Kevin Murphy, the world's greatest small game hunter.
Mm, yeah. Well, he was piling it on, man. That dude's been all across North America shooting birds.
Oh, dude, if you get into a text message war with Kevin Murphy about who's been doing what, yeah, it's hard to come out on top.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. So you only get to be here because you went on, you finally, after all the years I've known you, no, you could have been on because you're an avid angler.
Right.
Or an angler.
Right. I think that would get me passage onto the show.
You could have been on because you're an angler, but you only recently, like, why you went on your first hunting trip?
Yep.
Can you explain to me what why, like, why not before, but why all of a sudden now?
Well, I actually did used to hunt when I was in probably like 19, 20, but it was like deer camp hunting up North Michigan. My cousin owned a place like 40 acres up in Fife Lake.
Oh, dude, I know Fife Lake well.
I know. Yeah. That's where Matt Drost lives.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I would go up there during the fall, you know, one weekend of every fall and try to go get a deer. In fact, the first time I ever went hunting, I was walking out to my tree stand, I had my rifle on my shoulder, and I was probably, it was like, you know, 4:30 in the morning, come walking around a bend, and there is an 8-point buck just standing right there. And my gun's on my shoulder. So I'm thinking like, man, this is it, huh? This is easy. So I take the gun on my shoulder, and as soon as I do, the thing's gone. So I was like, well, I'm bound to see another one here soon.
And then
I see one in 20 years.
And then a lifetime passes. There's a writer. There's a gun writer, David Petzl, who has a line where he says, now Petzl, he's an interesting figure because he's like a gun writing columnist, but he's also, but he's kind of like weirdly infatuated with like celebrity. Who's famous? Do they deserve being famous? Stuff like that.
And doesn't, isn't he the one that kind of plays like the grumpy gun writer?
Yeah, like he has a what one would call a shtick, which is probably Yiddish, right?
I'm thinking so.
He has a shtick of it being he's a grumpy guy, like a grumpy old man. But he's aware of things that grumpy old men aren't aware of. Like, he has big opinions about, like, Miley Cyrus. So, like, the normal, like, grumpy old man that I know, if I went and said, hey, man, what's your take on what Miley Cyrus has been up to lately? They would look at you like, right?
Yeah. Crazy.
Like, right? Miley Cyrus. So it's like this weird grumpy old man thing where you're sort of, like, real hip to pop culture, but hate it. But you got a lot to say about it. Anyhow, he says, slings have saved more animals than PETA.
Slings, like
rifle slings.
Rifle sling. Oh, okay.
You know, because I don't know if you remember your story you just told us a minute ago.
I did. I forgot that thing's called a sling.
He's an outdoor life or field and stream.
Field and stream. Yeah. Very good writer. Very funny, but it's just like it's a complex sort of things he's got going on. Like the intolerant, grumpy old man / pop culture critic.
Right.
Which is actually like something you could really develop.
I would say that's a real. Yeah.
I was just going to say it sounds interesting. We might want to see if we could get him on to talk about this.
Yeah,
actually, I would like that.
Can you ask him if he just always carries his rifle like this, just out in both hands?
Yeah, slings save animals, but they save shoulders.
I was going to say,
or save arms, man. Like, what are you doing? You're climbing around. I think that the real lesson there. Well, you know, you look at pictures of. You know, this may help. You look at like the Africa guys, the professional hunters, the PHs in Africa. They don't use slings. They always carry it over there.
They don't carry their guns either.
Well, no, the PH does. He'll have his gun over his shoulder, but he's also 50 yards from the truck, hunting flat ground, and there's a lot of dangerous stuff that can stomp you. But I mean, you know, it's like he'd probably spin back around and set it on the truck. But yeah, they don't use them for that reason. I think that you could be Yanni is not. Tell him to give everyone your thoughts about slings, Yanni. Fitz, we're gonna get back to you.
Well, it's changed over the years, but I went through a phase of not carrying one for that same reason.
Because of readiness.
Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and because I got it enough, guys. I mean, it only happened a handful of times, but and I would even be prepping them like, "Hey, we're about to come over a rise. Good chance it's gonna be." You know, something ahead of us here. Maybe you should be ready. And maybe I should have just said, take the gun off your shoulder and, you know, carry it in a field-ready position. I didn't. But, yeah, we'd peek over, and there's that bull looking at you, and I'm like, oh, there he is. And, you know, as they get their sling off, he pieces out. So,
but, you know, one of the things we've gotten so kind of like paranoid about safety and stuff that I usually don't even have a round chambered.
Mm-mm.
So, The least of my problems is having the thing on my shoulder.
It's funny. I mean, I never even considered it. Like, I never considered the sling as being having an impact on readiness. It would just never occur to me.
It's pretty fast.
It's a good point, but...
Yeah, if you walked around with it up against your shoulder all the time, you'd, like, get a crack off faster.
There's a time and place, you know? Like, I'll put it on my backpack if it's dark. I don't really put on my backpack if it's light out where there's any chance of seeing a critter.
If my gun's on my backpack, it's because my tag is punched.
Yeah.
Or it's pitch black.
Right.
I hate that feeling.
But you got to be able to recognize, like, when you're sort of, again, to use my expression from earlier, but, like, kind of like diddly-dialing and not paying attention, not hunting, and you're going down a trail, and you just go, man, there's a good chance that something could be just standing here at any moment and get this rifle off your shoulder and just... Like, remember, everybody taught, they taught that, what do they call that? It is called, like, the cross body field carry, right? Yeah.
Stone Glacier, they got the pack thing. You ever see this?
Yeah, I have an Everly stock that I just go like.
No, that's not what theirs is. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, like a quick draw.
Oh, yeah, I can get
They have one where you hook it to your pack, but there's this little tab. So it rides behind your shoulder. It's vertical. Your rifle's vertical behind your shoulder, strapped to your pack. Like, total hands-free.
Got you.
There's this little tab that you can kind of, like, tuck into your shoulder strap or whatever. And when you pop that tab, it's like you're pulling a parachute. You pop that tab and your rifle's free.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it come down into, like a field ready?
No, it's like you pop it, then you kind of reach over your shoulder and grab the barrel or whatever, grab the stock or barrel over and just lift it out of the...
Man, I would like to see that work because
yeah,
dude, I
have a hard time imagining that's... How's that better than a sling?
Yeah.
It's not better than a sling. It's worse than a sling.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you were arguing the other way.
It's for having no total hands-free.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
It's better in the sense that like even a sling requires some care, you know, every couple minutes. And
so this is like intermediate. It's either in your pack and for all intents and purposes, you have no gun, right?
Yep.
This is like halfway between.
Yes.
Okay. I got it.
It's like, man, this is a long shit hike.
Yeah.
And I'm always, whatever, needing my hands to take leaks and open gates and whatnot. Yeah. And you just put the thing on there and then.
But if I have to, I'll pull that ripcord. And now you'll need be the
rip.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've done it and I keep my ripcord handy. I've never had to do a quick release, but. So anyways, Fitz, there you are. You never got a deer as a kid.
Never got a deer as a kid. No.
Hunting up Fife Lake.
Yep.
You guys hunting bait?
Some years, and then some years, no.
Because your cousin.
Mm-hmm. He owned a little piece of land, like 40 acres up there.
And you had hunter safety.
Yep. The other time that I went hunting, not that long ago, up on San Juan Island with Chef Andy, we were hunting those.
Chef Poot.
We were hunting those are Columbia blacktail up there, right? So you can only use a shotgun on San Juan. So I had a shotgun, and I was probably 50 yards from a little buck, and I had it lined up, pulled the trigger, gun misfired.
No.
Yep.
Wasn't user error.
No, it was not user error. I swear to God. And that thing took off. So. I need help, man. I'm here for help.
Yeah. Well, no, because we're going to get to your successful hunt.
I know, but I want to get a deer. I want to get, in fact, hearing about Matt's, elk hunt a couple weeks ago, I want to get over to Montana maybe in 2018 with your brother.
You got inspired by that?
I did get inspired by that.
So did the firing pin just not hit?
It must
hard
have.
Hard enough?
It must have. It must have, because then we went somewhere else and, I racked and shot it. Worked fine.
I don't know you guys tried to hunt deer on San Juan Island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is about 5 years ago.
Oh, I do remember this. So you have dilly-dallied.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With hunting.
I have.
Now, I don't want to say where it was. We're going to say that we're just beyond the fact that it was in North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the fact that it was North Dakota. Don't get into any great specifics.
Gotcha.
But talk about your impressions of turkey hunting.
It was so fun. I mean, it was the most interactive kind of, game experience I've ever had. I mean, with fishing, I don't fly fish, so I know that's a lot more physical and interactive and you're reading things differently.
Oh, they'd sure like to think it is. No.
Fitz, unless you want to go down a real different path.
Yeah. I've done a bunch. Yeah, sure.
With the walking out in the woods, looking around, making those calls, and then all of a sudden hearing that response is just one of the most exhilarating outdoor experiences I've ever had. And then, posting up, putting decoys there, and then calling them in. And just watch, the first day we were there only about 4 hours, and Matt called in a big tom. And just to kind of see that thing, 100 yards out coming in through the willow. And then all of a sudden, as he got closer, big plume goes up. I mean, it's just one of the most exciting things I've ever seen outside. And then
that was, and
Pooter got him. So then the next day we went out early in the morning and same kind of setup, just walking around the woods. Got a call, posted up.
Like you heard the.
Yep. Yep. And it didn't take long either.
You know what they call that? They call that spring thunder.
Spring thunder?
Yeah.
What do they call it in the fall?
they don't gobble. Well, I mean, some dork's going to write in about how they do gobble in the fall, and they do. But not like they do in the spring.
Not like in the spring. They're fired up.
Yeah, as they gobble in the spring. As Will Primo says, they're out there saying, this is my time of year in the spring.
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. Yeah, I got a Jake the next day. It was also the first time I've ever seen a turkey fly. That was interesting.
They're impressive.
Really impressive.
Were you aware that they could fly?
I knew they could fly. What are they, like a gallinaceous bird, right?
And good, Fitz.
I knew they could fly. But they can't fly long, right? They don't fly long distances. But just to see them fly, like they were much more agile than I would have expected.
Yeah, I would never accuse them of loving to fly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, powerful flyers.
Yep.
I mean, as far as just like the amount of energy and noise and just like when they take flight, it's not a subtle thing.
No.
You know when you like
flit.
You know when you're like walking through the woods and like a grouse will scare you to death.
Yeah.
Like a turkey would put you in your grave. Yeah. I mean the it sounds like somebody's shooting at you, you know, when one of those things takes off. You know?
Me and my boy were out, Jimmy were out there on Sunday, went out, took a little look for some small game, and he had his first getting the shit scared out of him by a rough grouse.
By a rough grouse, yeah. Yeah.
But it blew out of a tree about head high. But still, same effect.
It's super surprising.
Like, yeah. Ah! You know, like, what the hell is that? So here it comes, and you level off on him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that Jay got in close. He was in, God, probably, I mean, it seemed like 10 yards. He was right there. Maybe even closer. I mean, he was super close. And coming right up to that decoy.
And so this is the first time you've ever fired a shot, because you've tried. One, you screwed up because you're sling.
Yep.
Then you had your... You.
I tried.
I would argue that you did something wrong with your shotgun.
I would respectfully disagree, but no way to tell.
Can we back up to the shotgun question real quick? I don't want to dwell. Did you look at the primer? Was the primer dimpled?
God, I was going to ask that too.
Was there a strike mark on the primer?
Yes.
Oh.
There was.
All right.
Yeah, you're
right. No pop.
Not even a... Psh.
Nope.
Well, you know, it's funny. We were muzzleloader hunting this year in Maryland, and I heard a guy off in the swamp
either the pan or the cap, depending on what type.
It's like, you know, you're hearing like now and then like, boom, you know, this thing's loud, right? It's like real like, and all of a sudden off the swamp, you're... where the guy's cap went off and it didn't ignite. Yeah, dude, it was like prime time. It was like this dude was shooting at a... Ugh. This dude was definitely shooting at a deer.
It was like, know? He was just getting rid of the primer.
Yeah.
So, any feelings of remorse or anything? Like, what was your emotion? No.
Pure exhilaration. Just, you know, well, I was nervous because I was like, all right. I felt like the 20-year weight of history on my shoulders, right? Because I've had... two experiences.
Do you just refer to it as your slump buster?
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I will now, for sure. But yeah, it was, it felt incredible. It was wild, like, how active that bird was after it gets shot.
Oh.
Just, you know.
I mean, they don't just fall flailing, over and be like, oh, you got me.
Flailing. And then, you know, I was with Matt, and we ran over there, and he basically jumps on the bird.
Yeah.
And pushing all the air out of it, I guess. Is that what he's doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And no feelings of remorse at all. It was one of the most exciting outdoor experiences I ever had.
You probably realize this, and it might be counterintuitive to some folks, but that flailing is a way for you to see just how dead it is. Hmm. Because, like, the more, you know, for people who have a turkey hunt, when you shoot a turkey, you're shooting it. Generally, like if you're hunting with a shotgun, you're shooting it in the head with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, when you chop the head off a chicken, I don't know if anybody's ever chopped the head off a chicken.
Yeah, fly around. They go crazy.
Yeah, so when you see that, like, really just explode, like, fluttering and jumping around, I don't look at that and be like, oh, he's going to get away.
Yeah.
It's more like, oh, man, he's deader than dead.
Yeah.
I would prefer it, though, because they do sometimes just fold their wings up and just lay over.
I like
that. You don't always get a flop. Sometimes they do just kind of just literally fold their wings and tip over.
Really?
Because a couple of times I have seen it where it's like the flop and they keep getting a little farther away and they flop and they get a little farther away and then all of a sudden they're flopping but they're on their legs and you're like, oh, shit, shoot again.
No, any flopping that is them going whatever they're doing but they're going the other way, I take that as a very bad sign.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah. That's different than what I'm talking about when I'm talking about.
Is that because they haven't been, it's not a clean
hit? Well, he's got a what? Okay, like.
But I don't
imagine
like
a 360 degree circle. What are the there's right a 360 degree circle, and if he's picking that like 15 degree band that's directly away from me, I'm like, that feels to me like sure, he could be doing a general flop,
right?
Or there could be more to this, and the fact that he's coincidentally chosen the opposite direction to do that in, I get like real nervous.
But I don't think they look that different for a second. You know what I mean?
They don't.
That's what I'm saying.
My general protocol is like pull the trigger, and as soon as he's like flopping or whatever's going on, I'm up on my feet and gaining some ground.
Yes,
unless it's just
you'll never be glad that you didn't run over there.
Yeah.
There's no like pro to not running over there.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm really trying to say is birds flop around a whole bunch,
mm-hmm.
as evidenced by if you've ever dispatched chickens.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that he's like kind of still alive. That's all.
Yeah.
But no bad feelings.
Nope. Nope. It did surprise me the day before when Pooter got that Tom, how fast Matt was running towards that bird once Pooter shot. Like exactly like you said, Giannis. Like he was sprinting to that bird. So that surprised me. I wasn't expecting that. But
I lost a turkey once. Hit him. Assumed that he was down.
Yeah.
And didn't get over there fast enough. And we were on a very steep slope, and he pitched off that slope and just vanished.
Really?
You couldn't even begin to go look for him.
What was down the slope? Like a thicket? Just,
no, it was a big mountainside.
Oh. Oh, jeez.
And he, like, went down. I was like, oh, I got a turkey. Thing took two steps, and it was a steep pitch, like I said. Took two steps, pitched off that hill, and it was just gone.
Ugh.
No. Had me one time.
I've seen one shot that covered ground faster than anything I've ever seen. Like my buddy Eddie shot two, and the second one was only winged or whatever, and that thing vanished. I mean, I saw it running, and we couldn't throw down on it. And I was just like, I was pretty impressed with
its
track abilities. I mean, that thing was toodles. What?
You never found him.
Never found him. No, did not.
Yeah.
Look,
and that could be just, miss aim, because if you don't hit him in the head or the neck and you just body shoot him and you just get that big puff of feathers, I mean, you might have a few pellets that weave their way in there, but a lot of times not lethal.
Fitz, will you field questions about your wife?
Yeah. Can I hear some first before I decide?
That's fair, dude. That's
your wife eats seafood.
She does.
Doesn't like red meat.
Nope.
Would she have eaten the turkey you shot?
Probably not. The only time she's eaten meat in the last 15, 20 years was in Montana when we were helping out at your brother's wedding making all that elk ravioli.
And she accidentally ate one?
No, she's like, I guess maybe we just worked too hard in that kitchen and she's like, screw it, I'm going to eat one.
Really?
Yeah, and she did. She liked it. But I don't think she would eat the turkey.
But she likes to eat fish.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What do you think's going on there? I understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I've known people like that my whole life.
She's known at a very young age that meat was not for her. Like, she was a kid, who was complaining to her parents about anything that was meat at the table. And it was just a essential part of who she is.
Meanwhile, you have a shirt on that's a meat chart of a cow.
Mm-hmm. I like meat.
So, you feel that the turkey wasn't going to...
It probably wouldn't. No, I probably wouldn't do it. Maybe if I got a bigger animal. Maybe.
Really?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, she's eating elk, so...
So, do you picture now that you will go on more outings, more hunting trips?
I would like to. Yeah, I would definitely like to. Part of the reason that I haven't done it regularly is that I feel like I've always kind of been a little out of my element doing it. I didn't grow up hunting. I didn't have like a, you know, brother who took me hunting or anything like that, or even friends until I met you guys, really. And so I, you know, it wasn't something that I felt I had a lot of agency to do on my own.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, you ever play poker or blackjack at a casino?
Yes. And, well, no, because I feel too out of my element.
Exactly. Like, you don't want to screw up everybody else's, you know, game, right? And I kind of feel, I felt like that way for a long time about hunting. I don't want to go out there and mess up somebody else's situation.
Yeah. That's a good analogy, man. Because I like to play blackjack. Or used to not like to play, but we'd play blackjack at $2 tables.
Because
you go there and everybody at the table sucks.
Right.
But then when you go on your with serious players, right, you become like very self-aware.
Yeah.
Is anybody good at blackjack? Like, how do you say, like, oh, these guys suck? Suck at what?
Okay. All right.
Deciding if you hit or stay?
No. In that they have like real set opinions about stuff.
About what you stay on, what you
hit. So like you could be playing blackjack, and I'm not like Dr. Blackjack, but there are people who are suspicious enough or irrational enough to be that if you took a hit that's illogical, that you have disturbed the cosmos and have robbed them of the card that would have been theirs. And they will be mad at you.
Yeah.
Okay. Because if you knew what you were doing, you'd have known to never take that hit. Therefore, you have offset this thing that was in motion between the stars and the universe and that deck of cards.
So what you're saying is those are tables, like, it's not that the people suck. It's that the odds that somebody's going to come play at that table who sucks and messes it up for everybody else are just higher. Like, it could, you could have people.
I mean, that when I sit down, if I was to go sit at one of those tables, and I have to go to Las Vegas every year for work.
Yeah.
And I always really bad want to do it.
You want to go play blackjack?
Yeah, but I am like Fitz, where I feel like I will take too long.
Mm.
I don't really understand when to do what, that I'll have some irrational blowhard get like pissed about something I did. And it, because it doesn't really mean that much to me, I just sometimes don't, unless I see a table where no one's there or I'm with a couple buddies of mine. Like last year, me and Yanni threw down for a long time because we just had our own little scene.
Yeah, we had the whole table. Well, maybe five out of six spots.
Yeah, we had like five or six guys that we all knew each other. And so we could go play and I didn't need to feel like I was like inserting myself into this thing that was going on. My unprofessional.
But I think
self.
To get good, eventually, like, you're watching the cards so much that you sort of, in a way, start to count cards.
Yep.
Right? To where you kind of know what's been coming out, and so you're sort of like
expecting.
But
how many decks is it?
But no, it's like six decks.
I mean, you can get in trouble for counting cards.
But you can go play at Binion's or go play in some of the old school casinos, and they'll play single deck blackjack.
That would be different, and I would totally allow different. That would be very
that
different.
I'll have a higher minimum bet.
Are you a big blackjack player?
No, I play poker.
You do?
Yeah. House odds are bad, but if you're playing against another player, I just don't. Yeah. I like poker a lot.
Do you win a lot of money at poker?
No. No, I don't. I haven't played in quite a while, but I played a little bit. It's fun.
Why do you like professional football?
What? Wow, that's a jump. I don't know. I've always.
Because they don't know you. They don't like you. They don't live. They're not from here.
I was born. I've been playing football since I was, you know, a kid up until I was
like, dudes,
school.
They're not from here.
He's trying to explain. So he called me and asked me to go fishing on a night there was a Seahawks game. I'm like, no, I'm going to the football game. And he could not wrap his head around
I wasn't going to go fishing,
but I was going
to
go
watch it tomorrow
football.
In the morning.
Yeah.
It's an affront to his sensibilities.
I don't know. I've always loved football. I'm emotionally invested. I mean.
In people that you don't know.
You know.
Who are just...
I played team sports all the way through college. I mean, I've always been attracted to it, and
I know
never
that
was
right.
able to play at that level, but...
Yeah, I know you're right and I'm wrong, because everybody likes sports so much.
You're wrong.
Jimmy, I would feel remiss if I didn't stick up for you a little bit here, because I don't even have... Like, I didn't grow up watching football, and I never played it, but I like it now. As an adult, I like watching football. I have a team that I hope wins. I hope wins a game. I can't explain it.
What team is it?
It's the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
really?
Yeah,
that's cool.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
Why those? Because you're from Oregon.
I know. I know. So I
picks a winner.
I can't leave Jimmy to have hung out to dry because I'm even less
you
rational.
And everybody on the planet.
I know.
So I've had a guy, another friend of ours got into watching football, and he's like, because I hate TV so bad, I find myself that I'm in front of a TV. It's the most genuine seeming thing to me.
The football? Like watching the game?
It just feels like you're actually watching something genuine.
Mm. Yeah.
It was an early childhood
thing. It's like honest and genuine.
Mm-hmm. It's a contest. I mean, it's, but you're right. I mean, they don't know you. They don't, you know, I can't even explain it, but I do recognize now as an adult that I enjoy it. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's just always been there. Cornhusker football on Saturday mornings is one of my earliest memories. I was probably 4, you know, so.
Cornhuskers like the hand lotion?
No. That's hilarious. You're funny. Man. No, you just pissed off everybody in Nebraska.
Yeah.
There's a team called the Cornhuskers?
Nebraska. Yeah. Guess where I'm from. Go Big Red.
Really? A professional football team?
No. College.
Oh. College football.
All right. Well, I don't feel so bad about not knowing about them. Mm. Okay, now, Jimmy Doran, can you lay out can you explain a little bit about your Oregon hunting?
Sure. It was easy. It was great. What, the trip, the hunt itself?
Yeah, just kind of how it goes down.
My buddy's got a great big place. And
you know this
around.
Guy how? I met him.
Russ.
I met him at your restaurant.
Yeah, I was tending bar. And this is probably in like the mid-90s. I was still tending bar before I owned the place. And he came in with another buddy of mine, and we started talking about fly fishing. And then it was, hey, you want to go fishing? And we've been good friends ever since. And a bunch of trips, and I guess I want to say around 2000 or something, his dad bought a great big huge place kind of by Fossil, Oregon.
Cattle ranch.
The previous owner did graze cattle on there. There's some light ag, there's some wheat, and there's some hay and stuff there. But it was just mostly recreational. John
but someone
River,
still runs cattle out there, don't they?
They do. Oh. He has an agreement with his neighbor that we can hunt on his property if we allow them to graze cattle on his. So it's kind of a good, and it's a good handshake deal that's lasted quite a long time. And so we get to, you know, just
so
more,
just that,
more
that area. That's the deal.
That is the deal.
He grazes your buddy's land, and your buddy gets to hunt his land.
That's correct, yes.
That's pretty nice.
And it's a great spot. I mean, the John Day River runs right through the middle, smack dab through the middle of it. So there's fantastic smallmouth fishing in steelhead right now, and every kind of bird you wanted to shoot, more or less, and fantastic elk hunting.
Upland or waterfowl?
There's chucker. There's a couple pothole ponds, so there's ducks you can shoot for sure, not as many. I mean, you walk down and pop a couple in the morning. That's about the extent of your day. You jump shoot them. A lot of times you can push them back and forth if there's actually between the holes.
Have you guys done that where you go in? We used to do that in stock ponds now and then. Instead of going in there and trying to kick them off and take a shot, just kick them off, throw two decoys out, and hide.
And wait. Yeah, and they'll come
back. Because a lot of times they won't even leave. Yeah, you won't even lose track. Yeah, you'll see them circling way out. Yeah. And then they're like, all those dudes are gone now.
So I was in the truck.
It's like they're not.
What's that?
I said, but they're not gone.
No.
They're hungered.
They're right. Just a pretty easy 200 yards uphill shot. One just came around the bend. It was skylit, perfect, beautiful, perfect, symmetrical four-point buck. And it took one look at me, and that was the end of that. It was really easy. It dragged it downhill. I mean, it was like one of the most – there wasn't a pack out. It was a 150 yard downhill drag to my truck and then strung it up. It was great.
So do you feel that kind of that hunting down there is making you pretty soft?
I would 100% agree. Yeah, it's making me a little bit softer. I had occasion to go out on a high buck hunt in the Pasaten at the beginning of the season, and I was a little unprepared, and I was a little disappointed in my level of being a bitch, to be honest, on some of it. We got there and I had kind of misread a forecast, and you know, probably good idea to look not the valley floor but actually where you're going to start going in. And we rode horses in like 16 miles way back in there, and I'd read the brochure and whatnot, and the outfitter was just great people, but you know, it was, they kicked the wall tent off the side of the mules, and we got in late, and they
so
had
it's a drop off hunt.
Drop hunt, yeah.
So you hired an outfitter to pack you in,
yep.
But then he just drops you off
pretty much
good looking country, and then you're like on your own.
See you in a week. And
16 mile ride.
16 miles in, yeah. And I hadn't ridden a horse, and I mean, I had ridden a horse fairly recently, but not that far. I was surprised where I hurt the next day.
Yeah, your buttocks region.
My knees was the weird thing. But we woke up, and I was with a really good friend of mine, Henry, who just was amped about the whole deal. And it just, man, I woke up cold, and I thought I read cot, not bring a cot. I read there was
you
a cot.
You saw the word cot. You saw the word cot.
Yeah. So the setting up the tent, and they had this big burn ban. And the whole hunt kind of came off late because the area was closed, and the outfitter really had to put the screws to the Forest Service to get them to let them go back in there.
They closed it for fire season, for fire reasons. Yeah. And they were
they had closed the whole wilderness area. And anyway, so nothing was set up. We kind of got in. There was a burn ban, so we weren't allowed to make a fire. And then it was pretty cold the first day. You're sleeping on the ground, and
dude, you sound awful right now.
Yeah, I wasn't super jacked. I mean,
just like you're that soft from this Oregon private.
No. I think it's accumulation of a lot of.
So what wound up going on there? What happened? Were you guys seeing big giant bucks running around everywhere?
Didn't see a buck. Saw about 15 does total. Saw one spike, but it's a 3-point minimum.
How, like, if you had on a sliding scale of 1 to 10, how hard were you hunting?
I would say about a 9. I mean, you had to do, 2,000 vertical to get to where he wanted to glass. So you had to get up in the morning and do that in the dark. And then the second day, it snowed 9 inches. So throw that into the mix.
How many hunt days did you have?
6.
You stuck it out for 6 hunt days.
Well, it was either that or walk 16 miles out of there. Made, and I actually had all, that's the funny thing too, I'll admit it, but like I had all my shit packed. And I looked at it on the map, and the whole area, part of it is the Pacific Crest Trail. And I knew where my truck was, and I got to thinking, because my feet got wet on the second morning, and they didn't dry out. And we kicked the whole no fire thing to the, we were like.
Once there's 9 inches of snow on the ground.
Pretty sure. I'm like, if they want to write me a ticket, I'll go to court on this one. And, we made a fire, got kind of comfortable, but, I didn't really get warm for about a week.
Did you guys have a wood stove?
No. No.
But a wall tent with no stove.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to bring in a stove.
Oh, I see.
Because of the ban. So it was just kind of all thrown together at the last second. And my buddy Henry's really super just nice guy, resilient. He really tolerated me being a shithead for a couple days because I'm sure I wasn't too fun to be around. But it was up and down. I mean, it was, according to my iPhone, it was 80 stories a day. And it's straight up looking around, freezing your ass off for 6 hours. And I got good at taking a nap when I was cold. But it was great. It was hard, it was a hard hunt. Ridiculously beautiful place. I'm going back, but
there you go. That's the spirit, man.
I'm sure as heck gonna be well. I'm eating.
Bring a cot.
Yeah, well, I'll bring a cot. And I had also misread. I thought it was 50 pounds of gear per person. So I got like Mountain House and my Jet Boil. And this other group of hunters came, and they literally brought like a RV's worth of shit. Like they had boxes and 8 days worth of prep food and coolers and pack-alongs. And I had my one little, the outfitter looked at me.
And he dropped those guys off on top of your camp?
No, he dropped us first. And that's another reason why the wall tent went off. Here you go. Because it was getting dark. And they had another 3.5 miles to go. So we were hunting in this one big basin, and they were in the next. So there's just only 2 groups, and normally he has like 6 or 7 groups. So okay. It was beautiful. And it was, it was worth every penny, and I'm going to do it again. And, I've apologized to my buddy a bunch of times for.
Do you guys both have tags?
Well, yeah.
Did you kill one?
No.
We didn't
kill. No, you just said he never saw anything but a spike.
Yeah. Those guys.
The Washington High buck hunt, man, the more I talk to people about it, and even your stirring, inspiring story there.
that was in Oregon.
No, it was. This was in Washington. This is the first.
So is this the same one that Carmen was talking about?
Well, yeah, in that it's an early season high buck hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I'm going to become like Joe High Buck. I'm going to change my name to Joe High Buck.
You're funny.
I am so fired up about the high buck hunt.
I'll show you where I went, and there's no way that you don't love it. It is just absolutely beautiful. Like, ridiculously gorgeous, and there's tracks, and I'll go with you.
Dude, you know
teach
what?
Teach me something.
I'm glad you're still doing that because I'm starting to feel that like the Oregon private land hunt you go on, as fun as it sounds, it just seems like it's going to make a spoiled brat out of you.
Nah. I went to Montana as well, and that was legit. I mean, there's some walking around, at least, you know, it wasn't nearly as easy. So, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to go to this place in Oregon. It's just lousy with deer. I mean, there's...
Yeah, it's hard to not go.
It's, yeah. No, I'm going to go as long as they keep letting me go.
Yeah. There's a lot of public land hunters out there who hunt public land because they don't have any better options.
Right. There's a ton of public land also right next to this.
There's a rare dude who goes to the, like, who could go to, like, a gravy spot, but chooses to go to a shit spot.
I agree.
That's a rare man.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm lucky to get to go there. They're the nicest people. And, you know, fortunately, get to shoot stuff most of the time, or at least see stuff, you know. So, Montana was really good to me again this year. So I had tags in Oregon, and I bought tags in Montana.
Tag in Washington.
Tag in Washington, that's soup. And just because, to be honest, the freezer's full, and I didn't really feel the... That was an okay tag to burn because it was $40.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't burn Montana or Oregon when you're talking six bills or whatever.
You got to have something to show for it.
Yeah, I'm going to put a little bit more effort into that for sure. So Montana was fantastic this year. That was a good hunt with a good shot. And yeah.
I'm going to tear that high buck hunt a new one, man.
We're going to sit down and I'll show you maps.
I've been living here a couple years now and haven't gone.
You're more than welcome to come along.
Well, I'm always running around doing other junk.
It's the 15th. It's right in the kill zone for you, right? It's the 15th of September to the 25th.
Yeah, it's like 26th. The time when there's the most stuff to do.
Right.
What
overlaps elk as well.
What's the elevation for that out here?
Went in at 77 and I got as high as... I want to say tickling 9,000, but don't quote me.
You got to be wrong there because you said he rode in for 16 miles and you climbed 2,000 vertical from your tent. You'd been up on the top of Everest by then.
We did passes. We went over three different passes to get to where we were hunting.
I got you.
Which
I thought I taught you to lie.
No. Not fibbing.
Gotcha, journalism.
I won't lie. How many people listen to this? How many emails you get if I lie?
What did the guy charge you to ride you in 16
800
miles?
Bucks.
Hmm?
800 bucks.
And you got a...
Two of you.
You got a tent out of the deal.
Yeah. Pretty much. I think it would have been a little bit more cushy. Like I said, it was closed, and he wasn't allowed in there, and we got like the 11th hour call to go. I should also segue with... The whole story started with... I thought it was done. I thought we weren't going. I thought it had been canceled. I just assumed my deposit and my whatever would go for the next year. But I get like, and it was on the heels of a Seahawks game where I might have had a couple of beers. They,
not to read the brochure well. Yeah, maybe.
I get the phone call. Hey, we're going. Like, we're going like in a couple hours. And I'm like, I ain't going nowhere. What are you even talking about? It's canceled. He's like, nope, it's open. It's good. And they had to, you know, throw everything together when normally they would have had several weeks to prepare. And, so
yeah, I got you.
We showed up, and he was still putting bridles on mules and stuff. So it wasn't all the way dialed. And we left it. We started in at 1 o'clock when we definitely should have been starting in at about 8:30 in the morning at the latest. So I mean, it's just the whole thing was like, we got there, and of course, the last 2 miles, you know, started raining like God was angry. I mean, it was just like it was a cold, wet from jump, and you just, you know.
I love it.
You do.
I love it.
Yeah. That makes one of us. I'm not, you know, whatever.
No, I mean, I love
Nobody
it.
Likes
I don't
to
love
be cold
it. I just
wet.
Love it all in hindsight.
Yeah. Generally, I think we've had this conversation where the ones that you remember are the ones that, you know, potentially suck the worst, but you wax, you know, nostalgic or reminisce about how awesome it was. The harder I work for it, definitely the better I feel if I'm successful.
Yeah, when you're an old man.
Getting there.
So in a couple years,
right.
You're laying on your deathbed,
yeah,
dying.
Right.
You're not going to be like, oh, man, that one time, man, that was a short pack out. Hunting my buddy's place. Yeah. Cold beer in the cup holder.
Yeah.
No, you're going to be like thinking back to that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
That rainy, snowy, no campfire mountain.
Yeah. I'll do it better next year. I'll definitely be better prepared. And, you know, I owe my buddy one because he definitely was very tolerant. So
I want to go on the trip with you.
I think you are invited. I'll show you on a map. You'll look
over the counter attack.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, Matt Moyson, you had a harrowing trip. No, you don't think it's harrowing, though?
No, not really. Not really. I mean, this would be the shortest story for sure. It's tough. I hunted. It was hard. I did that for a while, and nothing happened. So, but I'll recap it. Really? No, I mean,
couldn't go where you wanted to go because yeah, there's so right. much snow.
Yeah, we
couldn't even approach it.
Wow.
Yeah, we weren't within. Now,
Don't say the spots.
Don't even give like mountain ranges.
No.
Okay.
Like it was
okay.
in
California.
It was the mountains. It was the mountains of North Dakota.
Okay. Yeah. Again, hunting in North Dakota.
Okay. You're right. So we had planned to hunt. Can I say the state?
North Dakota.
Okay. Where we had planned to hunt was inaccessible because of snow.
In the high mountains of
that's what I'm saying, mountains of North Dakota. And so we ended up having to pick another mountain range. But that wasn't that didn't seem real detrimental at the time because we've hunted that mountain range before and plenty of animals, plenty of, you know, that didn't seem like a limiting factor, you know, but we just couldn't quite make it work. Animals, we saw animals the first 2 days of the trip, and in fact,
hunting elk.
Yep, hunting elk. But just never put it together.
How far off were ones you were seeing? Like big balls of them?
300 yards. A guy. One of the guys in our party missed a shot at like 275. I actually missed a shot on that trip.
I heard about
it. I missed a head shot on an elk.
Which is dicey.
Which is a terrible shot to have to take. And it's one of those where I thought, this is either going to go totally not my way or it's going to go my way.
Reminds me of Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah. Me too. If he hunted. Yeah, I mean, so it was a, you know, low percentage shot at something that, and it's one of those things, like, I don't know how often you guys do this, but I'm always like replaying stuff in my head. You ever just like replay what happened and think about what you should have done?
I can't believe I have any energy or time in my day to go forward for all the time I spent analyzing the past.
I spent a full day thinking about how I should have done that different. Like, what I could have done different that would have let me had a shot at the body of that elk and not a head. Was elk in behind a blowdown timber and had me dead to rights. It's like, well, I was standing, because if I bent down, her head wasn't even visible, you know? So it was, I mean, anyway, it's a bummer of a shot, and I didn't make it, so that's an even bigger bummer. But that was it. You know, that was the first, I guess that was the first day. And then after that, we just weren't into animals. You could see where animals had passed through in a, you know, migrating from high to low, but we didn't see any of them move.
Like being pushed down by the snow?
I think so. So the first, there was a lot of snow. And the first, the 2 days before we got there and the first day we were there, there was quite a bit of snowfall. And you could see animals moving. We would be like before light the first day, we drove past a string of cow elk that was probably, you know, they were nose to butt for probably most of a mile.
Traveling.
You know, like they like to travel kind of like at the dark.
You saw them from a highway.
Yep. Yeah. So driving in, we saw a you know.
On private.
Yeah. Yeah. All low down on the farm.
On the great ranch land.
Yeah. Yeah. Ton of elk. And actually, even from up in the mountains, you could glass way down and just pick out hundreds of them in the flats. But they're so far. I mean, they're thousands of feet below you. Or yeah. I'm guessing, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, they are.
Yeah. So anyway, we just, you know, no one in the party ended up getting an elk. So,
and how many miles were you guys walking every day?
I'm not very good at counting. I don't know. You'd probably have 5 or 6 mile days, yeah. I guess. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard for me to guess.
I used to hunt with a guy who had grown up in a city, and he would always talk about blocks.
Oh, really? Just he put would, it into...
He would be like, even with caribou. Would you think of like, anyone looking at a caribou would have no idea about a city block. But he would talk about, it's probably like, he'd be like, I saw a bull probably three blocks away.
Wow.
That's great.
Wow.
I'm not kidding you, man.
That is great.
And the distances he walked, he would give you in blocks.
It's about 742 blocks. Yeah. No, I'm bad at judging that. But, you know, it's challenging country. I mean, it's either up or down, you know, if it feels like. So.
And you're walking in snow.
Yeah, there was 6 or 8 inches of snow. Yeah.
That adds to it for sure.
It does. You know, I've gotten better at that later in life, though.
Better at what?
I've gotten better at being uncomfortable. Yeah. I was not good at that as a young person.
It's a learned skill, man.
I had a real problem with it. And now I feel like I can just kind of chill out. It's like, yeah, I know. This sucks. But, you know.
Yeah, being okay with trudging.
Yeah. I was not good at it. I really wasn't. I mean, you've known me for 22 years.
But I never knew you as I never thought of you as a cupcake.
I did. No, but I mean, I think it's like... I was fine with this hunt, and actually I wasn't even super bummed out to not get one. I mean, I just felt like that's what an elk tag is, man. You know,
dude,
if you went up and just plug one every time,
but you go look at success rates. If you go look at non-guided, non-resident elk success rates, they hover like around 10%.
Wow.
Well, I'm in the 90, I can tell you that for this year. Yeah, no, I was okay with it. I mean, anytime you're successful when you're hunting, it's a thrill. It's still a thrill for me anyway to be a successful hunter. But I think that not having success it's like weirdly also poignant, and it didn't bum me out. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Man, you've like really arrived at like a mature, like a Zen type locale.
That is one thing that's absolutely
Next year, I'm getting two mule deer tags. I'm killing something. Yeah.
Next year, I'm putting in for mule deer doe tags.
Yeah.
It used to bum me out. I mean, for myself personally, when I was a kid, if I didn't get something, that was a failure. And now just being there is success. So,
to me, it depends a lot on what's going on in the old freezer.
Yes, that's a good point.
Right. If I'm sitting on a couple freezers packed full, I get real not nonchalant, but I get real interested in seeing my buddies find success. Mm-hmm. Then it's fun. That's fun for me then. Mm-hmm. But if I'm kind of like really weighing out, just like wanting to have the jam packed freezer full of meat, then I get a little bit fussy. Mm-hmm. Where I become less interested in my buddies' good times.
Got you.
You know.
In a weird way, I think being like, I don't hunt that much. I mean, I really don't with career and family and kids. Like I'll do sort of probably one good hunt like that every year.
Yeah.
And maybe I get to do some in-state stuff and, you know, goof off. But, I feel like in a certain way, hunting less is not made me care less, but enjoy it for its like experience more, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And I'm not so outcome driven as when I hunted more. Like
when you were carefree and would go all the time.
When I was younger, I would hunt more. I'd be more miserable, or at least wallow in it, and I would care more whether I was successful or not. And
that's interesting, man.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand it either, but it's true.
So now, older, more seasoned, more responsibilities, you're willing to go out there, enjoy the sucky aspects.
Yeah.
And not fixate on the success thing that you used to be pushed by.
I guess so.
So you used to be like, I hate being uncomfortable. I really want to get something.
Maybe I really wanted to get something so you could get home. I don't know.
Yeah, that might
maybe.
Be.
Maybe.
The only way to get out of here, the only way for me to get out of here and save face is to be able to get
something. If I don't fill this tag, man, I'm going to have to be out here forever. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's funny.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Jimmy Dorn, can I ask you about one last thing related?
Sure.
You were upset when Chris Cornell from Soundgarden died. Can you talk about that?
Sure.
Oh, man.
Why'd that upset you?
I don't know. I met him when I was, young. We're about the same age. And I think we discussed it pretty well. Like, I just can never wrap my brain around what, in my opinion, is a temporary problem with an obviously permanent solution when somebody does that.
Suicide.
Not to make, you're like, man, just call somebody something. Like, geez, there's so much left to offer.
That's what spoke to you about that.
Well, that, there's two different ways. I get pissed. I'm like, oh, what? Too many private jets, and you're tired of those five-star hotels? Like, what's going on here? Most people, large percentage of humanity would feel pretty good about the situation he was in. But, I've never understood. Like, I mean, I really liked him, and I obviously loved the music a lot, and you're just like, dude, why would you just not just call somebody? I don't know. It couldn't have been that big of a deal. Couldn't have been that big of a deal that you're done and you just couldn't wait till tomorrow and tomorrow's going to maybe be better or something. I don't know, man. Try to stay optimistic. But, yeah, that was definitely that one sucked. It really bummed me out.
There's so many good musicians.
There are lots of them.
That just kill themselves, man.
I don't get it.
The guy, the Mark Linkus from Soundgarden. Mm-hmm. Or not Soundgarden, no, Sparkle Horse.
Mm-hmm. We talked
shot
about
himself with a shotgun in the chest.
Oh, jeez.
That can't be good. Elliot Smith stabbed himself to death with it.
Yep. This conversation's taking a dark turn. I did. we talked about David Wallace, right?
And Foster Wallace.
And but I tried to read his books again on your prompt. I even bought the book.
Did
you told
read
me.
A supposedly fun thing I'll never do again?
I did. I've got.
You couldn't
about,
find it in you.
I know I'm there, but it's just like trying to get a drink out of a fire hose, man. It's like,
really? Do you read, have you read Brief Interviews with Hideous Men?
No. I'm still working on what was the last one you said?
Supposedly fun thing I'll never do again.
Yeah. I kept Infinite Jest next to in my room so that way I look smart.
So when you have ladies
over. Use it as a prop.
I saw Tom Petty the week before he died here.
Oh, did you know that show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For just total weird circumstance. I mean, I like Tom Petty, but I would not have bought a ticket to that. You know what I mean? It's just not really
what are you saying? Because I bought a ticket. Me and the missus went to see Tom Petty. Not there, but
oh, really?
2 or 3 years ago.
No, I'm not saying anything by it. It's just like.
We're suckers?
Yeah. Anyway, tickets fell into our lap, and we went. And we were invited by like a work colleague. Like, oh, man, I'd love to go. I'd love to see Petty. You know, he's an icon.
Dude, he's a great American.
Yeah, one of the greats.
And that's the story of Tom Petty is a story about everything that's great about America.
But here's so I just bring it up because of Jimmy's story about Chris Cornell, which is like horrible. I view Tom Petty as the opposite. There's a glorious story. That dude wraps up a tour and figurative mic drop and just goes out.
Yeah. Right.
And like, how do you do better than that? What's the quote you used to say? Like some guy said, if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it like Petty did it.
Oh, yeah. It was an interview with another musician who said, if I could do it all over again, I'd do it like Tom Petty.
Yeah. That's what I thought about when he died.
When I say Tom Petty's a great American, I mean, the story of Petty's like career and success is right. Like to be like kids from Gainesville, Florida, like a garage band, become like a bar band, cover band. You go out to LA to make it big. None of you's ever been west of the Mississippi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You find some scrap of paper in a phone booth with like some record producers' names on it and start calling. It's just a bizarre story.
Great story.
No, it's iconic. That's the thing. It's like, and even when he died, I was like, this, in a way, is the coolest thing in the world. I mean, it's terrible he died, but it's like, you're going to die anyway.
What a way to go.
Why not rap? Why not put a bow on it?
Speaking of suicide, American Girl. She could hear the cars roll by on old 441 like the waves crashing on the beach. And for one desperate moment, it's about a girl that kills herself jumping out of a window.
American Girl is?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's about a suicide. Oh, God. Yeah, he's in the court. Like, oh, God, it's so painful. Something that's so close but still so far out of reach. Yeah. American Girl. I understand it's a dollar line now. So I think that's it. Oh, no, one last thing. A guy wrote in. I had said something like having a hammer hanging over your head. And a guy wrote in to say, oh, it's not that. You meant the sword.
Damocles sword.
Sword of Damocles.
Yeah.
Did you write in that?
Nope.
How do you know what I'm talking about? How do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, because it's not a hammer over your head. That's not a thing. The sword over
imagine, your head. No, I was being like, I wasn't referring to that. The sword of Damocles, because you guys are alluding to it when you talk about famous people, rich famous people killing themselves. So a king has like a guy in his court who's just a professional flatterer, okay? And he says to the king, my God, for just I would love just to be you for, to be you. You have it made, right? Mm-hmm. You're rich. You're the king. Like, why can't I be you? And he goes, oh, please. I'll show you exactly what it's like to be me. And seats him at the banquet table with the beautiful women around him, the food, the wine, the drink. And then he takes a sword and hangs it from a single horsehair high above his head.
Is that right? I guess I don't know this.
And he says, okay, do you want to stay in my seat now? Yeah. The sword of Damocles. Hmm.
And the hammer of Steve Rinella. Yeah.
All right, fellas.
You do have a. You, by the way, you do have a kayak paddle over your head. So I think it's symbolic.
Yeah, carbon fiber Werner paddle could fall and bust me in the head.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it wouldn't even give you a headache. So it'd float down like a feather.
I don't know if you know Fitzgerald, but up at the fish shack,
yeah.
The next time you go to take the boat out to get take the canoe to get the skiff,
uh-huh.
You'll notice that I now have a carbon fiber canoe paddle up there. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think I saw something else about this. Yeah, good stuff.
You keep thinking you forgot the paddle, then you realize that you're paddling.
It's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.